I'm Algernon Cash, and you're locked in. On this show, we talk about money, markets, and the mindset you need to build real wealth. I'm your host, Algernon Cash. Today, we're digging into a topic that matters to anybody trying to grow their money and sleep at night. How to invest based on actual evidence, not hype, headlines, or hot tips. My guest is Theodore Hicks, the founder, CEO, and chief investment officer of Hicks & Associates Wealth Management, an SEC registered advisory firm based in Cary, North Carolina. Ted has spent more than 25 years managing money and just released a new book titled Evidence-Based Investing. To invest well over a long term, sometimes you have to first survive the short term. In it, he lays out a rules-based active approach designed to help investors navigate long stretches of tough markets by focusing first on surviving downside risk. We're going to unpack what evidence-based actually looks like in practice, how he measures risk, and what his current market cycle means for your portfolio. Whether you're just getting started or closing in on retirement, this is a great conversation for you. Ted, welcome back to the show, man. Thank you for locking in again.
I'm happy to be here, Algernon. I appreciate the invite back. I'm curious to hear what you thought of the book.
Well, I have the book here, right here. I appreciate this gift. You sent it to me, I think now, maybe a couple of months ago, and I got caught up in the election cycle, so we wasn't able to get you on as fast as I was hoping. But first of all, I know how long you've been working on this, because you and I had a conversation about this at the early part of 2025. And I know it has to feel so rewarding to get across the finish line and publish your book. Congratulations. Let's just start there. Where did the motivation come to actually publish the book?
It's somewhat, and I talk a little bit about this in the book, to some extent, it was my dad. My dad passed in 2013, and I knew that he wanted to write a book, and he was very gifted. Any skills I have in writing really come from him. And the editing of my term papers that he offered, there was a lot of red ink when my dad edited my term papers. But it was, to some extent, a personal challenge, Algernon. I wrote a white paper for our website, and to write a white paper that a prospective client would read, it needs to be brief. But I found it to be a challenge to be brief, but still be, you know, a good white paper. And so that kind of just led to the question, do I have enough to write a book? And so it really kind of began as a challenge. A friend of mine had published a book earlier in the year. And as I was congratulating him, he knew that I was debating it. And he just said, Ted, just pull the trigger and start writing. You'll be surprised how quickly it gets done. And he was right. It just started to flow out. And obviously, it took a while to edit it and get it to the point where I was comfortable with it, but it actually came together fairly fast. I ended up working with Westbow, as they're listed as the publisher. It's self-published, but I worked with them. And I'm overall really pleased with how it came out. I think the book looks really good. And overall, I'm tickled to death. I'm getting really good feedback on the book. It's, you know, from people saying that they're, my wife, you know, believe it or not, She doesn't get into the weeds on finance. She just lets me handle it. And so she sat down and she read it. She's like, I actually understood it. So I'm pleased.
Anytime you get spousal approval, that's better than the New York Times best-selling list right there. So again, Amen. Man, congratulations. I know that it requires a certain amount of discipline and passion to be able to produce something like this. And I enjoyed reading it, and I'm so proud of you for being able to get this across the finish line. And to my audience as well, I know people are listening and seeing this through video, but this is a very well-produced book. I mean, I don't know if you can tell, but this is all hard copy. So this is a very, very well-manufactured book. So congratulations, Theodore. When you say evidence-based investing, talk a little bit about how that's different from just traditional investing.
Well, you know, what's slightly humorous, Algernon, is when I was probably about 80% of the way done writing the book, and I had the title in mind almost from the beginning, and I'm about 80% of the way done, and it occurred to me that I should get evidence-based, I should get the URL, right? I'm going to have to market the book. I should buy the URL. And as I started investigating it, there is a whole other camp in this industry that uses this term evidence-based investing. And as it turns out, they're arguing almost exactly the opposite of what I'm talking about, which I find really interesting. And there's, I won't bore you with those details, but what I mean when I talk about evidence is what's actually happening. You know, in today's world, you can look at a stock chart, you can look at the stock prices very, very easily. And so theoretically, let's say, I don't know, pick your favorite country. They just had some major election and that country should be doing great. Well, yeah, but if their stock market is in a downtrend, I don't want to buy that. I want to see evidence that something is actually working right now. It's not speculated to work in the future. It's actually working right now. And so the answer to your question is it in a positive trend? If it's not in a positive trend, if it's not going up, I'm not interested. I don't care how great it sounds. I want to see evidence that it's actually working.
You picked a very long subtitle for the book. It says to invest well over a long term, sometimes you have to first survive the short term. Why did you choose that phrase? And what problem are you trying to help investors to solve?
It's a bit of a cliche in this industry that you're a long-term investor. You read the book, so you know how I feel about that term. And, you know, it's the stock market always comes back up. Well, yeah, so far the United States stock market has always come back up, but it's not guaranteed to come back up in the time frame that you have available. So, you know, if we're about to witness a major market meltdown, right? And I'm not forecasting that. But let's just say that that happens. Well, if you're planning on retiring at the end of 2026, can you really tolerate a 20 or a 30% drawdown in the current year right as you're going into retirement? I would argue the answer is no. And there's plenty of times throughout our nation's history where the stock market does basically nothing for long periods of time. Most people can't tolerate that. And so when you hear the talking head say you're invested for the long haul, I would argue that is disingenuous at best.
Well, Ted, talk a little bit about some of the short-term risks that you like to focus on through your firm. I mean, what is it that you like to pay most attention to? Is it interest rates? Is it credit? Is it politics? Is it something? I see you shaking your head. No. Is it something else?
It's happening, right? And so I pay attention to the macroeconomics, right? I pay attention to the interest rates. I pay attention to all the data that the Federal Reserve is spewing out. But that's so I can talk in an educated fashion to my clients about what I think is actually happening. But if all the economic data is positive, but the price trend is negative, meaning the stock market is going down or a particular position in our portfolio is going down, that's the evidence that tells me what I need to do. And so that's what I'm talking about is I want to find what's actually happening at a micro level on each and every single one of our positions inside of a portfolio, because a portfolio is nothing but a mixture of a bunch of different assets. So how are each one of them, how are they acting?
So when you take a look at this current market cycle, and I'm not as smart as you, Ted. So I've been scratching my head all year long. I know that when the tariffs got introduced in April, the market took a huge correction, very significant. It eventually did rebound over late spring and going into the summer, and it's continued to just go up. Now, when I listen to the pundits on Bloomberg and CNBC, many can't seem to explain why the market is continuing to go up. The fundamentals don't seem to match the performance right now. So how would you describe the environment that investors are in currently?
I put this out on our YouTube channel last week. There is a very big divergence in the market right now. And unfortunately, it's been there for quite some time. And what I mean by that is when people talk about the market is going up. What they're generally referring to is the S&P 500 or the Dow Jones. That's not the market. The S&P 500 is 500, it's technically 503 stocks, but it's cap weighted. So the top 10 stocks in that index account for 40% of the return. So it is very easy. It's happened many, many times where the S&P 500 posts a profit for the day, but 490 stocks out of the 500 are down. Well, how is that possible? So the market is actually very, very thin, and that is one of the very big risks that we are seeing in the market right now, is the average stock has really gone nowhere for a couple of years. So yeah, the market has gone up, but that's the Mag 7. That's the top 10 stocks that are just, they're thriving. And so the average stock has not been doing well in this environment, and that's not a good sign. Now, you also know that the Federal Reserve has cut interest rates a couple of times. Now there's talk that they might not actually cut rates again next month, like we were most of us were thinking they would. Well, that means they're starting to ease. And so there is an argument that the average stock and the average company has been in a mini, what I'll call an undeclared recession for a couple of years underneath the surface. Now, you could argue easily that the tariffs has not helped that company, right? Well, if we're starting to see some of this easing from the Federal Reserve, there's an argument that perhaps we are finally going to get a tide that's going to raise all the boats. But right now, we don't have that. We only have a very thin market. More than half of the stock market is negative. More than half of the stock market is below their 200-day moving average, which indicates a downtrend. That's not healthy.
You raised the point about the Mag 7, and that's something that I've been watching throughout this year. And to your point, I think the Mag 7 moves 35 or 40% of the index on any given day. Companies like NVIDIA, who have reached all-time highs in terms of valuation, Tesla approving a $1 trillion pay package for Elon Musk, despite the fact the company doesn't currently make any money. You talk about evidence investing. How do you really feel about the Mag 7 and just the valuations that you're currently seeing?
Great question. To some extent, while we would tell you that we look at both fundamentals and technical analysis, we have a strong bias towards technical analysis. And Cisco is the example that I give in my book. In, I don't know, chapter 2 or 3, I talk about how Cisco was reporting record earnings. And they, I think it was November of 2000. I think that's right. November of 2000, they reported more record earnings. The stock was already down 30% from their highs, and it proceeded to fall another like 60 or 70% or something crazy like that. So stocks can fall even on strong fundamentals. Stocks can rise on weak fundamentals. So when a stock rises, to some extent, you could argue everybody's thinking NVIDIA is going to take over the world, and therefore NVIDIA keeps getting bid up. Well, we're also in an environment, Algernon, where more and more people are, especially more people that are managing money for others, there's this movement towards passive investing and using ETFs. Now, in my firm, we use a lot of ETFs, but we use passive investments very, very actively. Most people in the industry don't trade anywhere near as much as we do. And so when they go in, they buy an S&P 500 ETF, all that's doing is making the divergence worse, because that ETF has to buy all of those stocks in that index. And so it's adding more volume to those typical Mag 7 stocks. So to answer your question, I don't pay a ton of attention to the fundamentals, because if the stock is going up, I don't care what the fundamentals say for the most part. The stock is going down, I don't care what the fundamentals say for the most part.
So who's driving those higher valuations, Ted? I mean, is that the typical retail investor that has a Schwab account and they're just chasing gains? Or is it institutional investors? Or is it just hot money out there that's pushing valuations higher?
You're not going to get something that's pushing valuations like that unless the institutionals are behind it. But the thing that most people forget is there's a lot of money inside of 401ks. Well, those 401ks usually are fairly passive. You get hired by your company, you set up your 401k allocation. There's also a lot of money in these target date funds, right? So your allocation gets set up and most people just leave it alone for better or for worse. Well, those mutual funds, the Fidelity mutual funds or the Vanguard, all those funds, they're by prospectus, they have to largely remain fully invested. They can only hold a very small percentage of cash. And so if you keep giving them money in a weak environment, what are they going to buy? They have to buy something. Are they going to buy a speculative smaller company that might they might have a hard time selling? Or do they buy the NVIDIAs, the Apples, the Googles of the world? Because if the market, if we do go through a recession and they have to create cash for their shareholders, it's a lot easier to sell those trillion-dollar companies. And so a lot of mutual funds that are holding it, their this institutional pockets of money, they're buying all these big stocks. They're hiding because it's quote-unquote safe. If they have to liquidate fast, they can liquidate those big stocks a lot easier than they can liquidate a smaller company.
Well, thinking again about just the ordinary retail investor that's probably listening to this conversation today, and you know, maybe their cousin is telling them to buy the dip. You know, when you see NVIDIA go down, you need to be buying in. What are some red flags that tell you someone is not investing based on evidence, and maybe they're just following some narrative?
Oh, there's a ton of evidence that people are just there, and that's part of the reason I wrote my book. Is there's a lot of ink that is spilled. For a simple example is, are we going to go into a recession? Well, why do we care? Why does the average American care if we're going to go into a recession? Well, obviously there's some safety in whether or not they're going to get laid off and things of that nature. But a lot of ink is spilled about recessions because leading into a recession, the stock market usually corrects. And so there's a lot of ink that is spilled on buying and holding for the long term, and they don't know what else to do, so they just keep doing that.
And is it? I mean, and obviously in your book you talk a little bit about applying like a rules based framework mm-hmm. for investing. I mean, what are some of those rules that really matter the most to you?
Well, it depends. I mean, that's kind of a hard to answer on a show like this, but let me give you a simple example. I was talking to somebody last week on this particular topic. If you and I hold the same stock, okay, let's say NVIDIA, it doesn't matter, and you and I sell that same stock on the same day at the same price, did we come to the same decision? Well, some would say, well, yeah, if you sold the same stock at the same time at the same price, you came to the same decision. Not necessarily. I'm going to sell something because it hit, we're following a process. It hit our stop. We're following that rule. Our rule is we're going to risk a little bit. We're not going to buy a stock and hope that it goes up forever. We're only going to have, we're going to have a predefined exit strategy. So if we sell something, we're selling it for a very specific reason, whereas some people are selling because they're scared. Two different reasons, two different decisions points. So when I say you have to have a rules-based process, don't follow my rules. That's why when you read my book, it is not formulaic. I'm not giving you what we do. I'm telling you big picture. I'm trying to help the reader to understand some of the things that they need to think about when they're trying to invest their own money or when they're going to go invest for other people. But you have to come up with your own rules. A simple one would be, is it trading above the 50-day moving average? If it sells below, if it closes below the 50-day moving average, I'm going to sell. That's a rule. It's not necessarily a good rule or a bad rule. That's for you or the money manager to decide.
Yeah. So like everybody just needs their own individual strategy, and that strategy needs to align with your investment portfolio and your goals and the things that you're trying to create for yourself. Now, your clients, they are able to benefit from this sort of active management process that you guys are able to provide at Hicks and Associates. Some retail investors, when they hear active management, they automatically think that means higher fees and more cost and those kind of things. What are some of the things people might be missing when they think about active management versus just buying an index?
So you just summed up again why I wrote the book, because if you want to buy, there's nothing wrong, Algernon. There is absolutely nothing wrong with just buying the index. So long as if you're going to buy that index and you're going to hold that index, that strategy can indeed work out. But you also have to recognize those big indexes, like if you're going to buy the NASDAQ index, okay, well, that includes like 80% drawdowns. Are you comfortable with that? Well, yes, it's come back, but what would your psychology be if you saw your portfolio getting hit in the face with an 80% drawdown? Or the S&P 500 is experiencing, I show the charts in my book, in the 2000.com crash, it was something down like 40% or 41%. And then the global financial crisis, it was down 47%. Well, if you want to buy the index and just hold the index and, you know, your faith in the American economy, it's going to come back. Well, that can work. But in working with retail investors and working with people who have accumulated some degree of wealth, they don't want to see it suffering 20, 30, 40% drawdowns. And so that's why we have a defensive approach. Now, I also talk about this in the book that, you know, this is going to make me sound old, but when I started studying this industry, the books, the textbooks say, well, not counting taxes and commissions. Well, tax is a different conversation because we haven't gotten rid of those. But commissions, for the most part, we're trading in a zero commission environment. And that's not unique to me and my firm. It's not like we are working in some unique environment. Most of the big custodians, there's no transaction costs. And so if there's no transaction costs, my theory is, well, why wouldn't you just put in some protection by shifting into cash? Because volatility begets volatility. You've heard the saying that if you miss the 10 best days in the stock market, your returns are going to suffer. That has been disproven so many times. The reality is if you miss the best 10 days, you're probably also missing the 10 worst days because high volatility tends to be clustered. I actually posted a chart to that effect on my LinkedIn profile this morning if you didn't see it.
For someone who's listening, Ted, that might not understand how active investment or active portfolio management works, if you're not getting paid based on commissions, explain how you do get compensated.
Most of the people that are managing money for the retail, not all of them, but most of the people that are managing money for retail investors are doing it on a fee. So my firm, we charge clients a fee to manage assets. So if your portfolio goes up, it's a percentage. It's 1 to 2%, generally close to 1.25% for the clients that we're working with. So if your portfolio goes up, our fees go up. If your portfolios go down, our fees go down. And I don't know if this is hard to believe or not, but we don't like it when our fees go down.
Yeah, your interest is always aligned with your clients, and that's powerful. I just wanted to make sure we got that out there for people to understand that your fees is still to a large degree is tied to performance. Sure, and the better you perform on behalf of your clients, the more money you make. You know, Ted, you're not just a technician. You're also a certified Kingdom advisor. Mm-hmm. So how does your faith and values connect to how you think about risk, stewardship, and investing?
Great question. First of all, there's a lot of talk in the industry about how you invest as a Christian and things of this nature. And that's a whole nother topic. We can't really get into that. But I would argue that I take my faith seriously. I take my vocation seriously. I do what I do because this is how God wired me. And I am not glorifying God if I'm accepting mediocrity. So I'm going to try to excel in everything that I do at all times. Doesn't mean I get every decision right. That doesn't mean we are all profits and no losses. That is not what that means. But we believe strongly that God has given us clients to take care of, and we're going to do our utter best to take care of them. And some of that means that we have to help their psychology. Because how many times do you find in scripture where it says, do not worry? Do not be anxious, or do not fear. Any of those, there's a lot of that. Is it easy to do? No, a lot of people have a lot of fear. A lot of people have a lot of anxiety. And so I believe a large part of my process is designed to help quell as much anxiety as I possibly can. I can't guarantee you that either this administration or the next administration or the administration over in Russia, that World War III is not, I can't do anything about that, but I can take charge and take ownership, or stewardship, if you is a better word. I can take stewardship of the assets that clients are entrusting to me. Again, doesn't mean I'm going to get every decision right, But if you're serious about the calling that you have, you take that role seriously.
I totally agree with you, Ted. I think it's so important to be a good steward. And, you know, not only you, but people like myself who have been trusted with resources and knowledge and talent.
Right.
It's so important that we manage those resources sustainably. You know,
Well, it's not only that. It's also, Algernon, if I can add on to that, part of, I believe, our role, and I posted on this on LinkedIn too. Sometimes we will have clients because we serve a lot of the C-suite executives. So sometimes they're going to have a lot of stock in their company because that's a part of their compensation package. Well, one of our clients wanted to gift some of the highly appreciated stock shares to their donor advised fund. That's a great strategy. It's a part of their giving. It's a part of their stewardship from their kingdom mentality. It's going to help lower the taxes, et cetera. But he sent me the message and I was like, don't do that. And his initial response was, well, why? And I was like, because I'm going to look at the charts. That particular stock is up, I think, about 10 to 12% since he thought about doing it. And I'm like, well, that's to some extent active management. It's not predicting what's going to happen. It's looking at the macro environment and zooming in to see what's actually happening, factoring in when that company earnings report is, et cetera, et cetera. All of that goes into making that decision for that client. And as a result, in my opinion, their tax deduction is going to be 10 to 12% larger because we were active in our analysis and the timing of when we make that decision.
No, I think that's very powerful. And I love the way you're aligning and integrating your faith also with your professional practice, which brings about real purpose. So I think that's extremely powerful. Just a couple more questions before I got to let you go. You mentioned just a moment ago about fear and anxiety, which that's just a normal emotion that you see within investing, whether it's real estate with what I do day to day or, you know, more equities and fixed income, which is what you do day to day. What behavioral mistakes do you see over and over again now, regardless of income level?
Right.
And then how does your evidence-based investing approach help people override those emotional decisions?
Well, to some extent, this is where financial planning comes in, too. I started my practice as a financial planning practice, and now today we're much more focused on being a boutique asset management firm. But there's still a lot of validity in financial planning. So are you worried about being laid off? If that's your anxious, if that's what's causing the anxiety, all right, fine. What are you doing about it? One of my favorite verses, Algernon, is Nehemiah 4:9. And I think I get that right. And I believe that verse says, remember the story about Nehemiah, it's where they're rebuilding the walls of Jerusalem. And they were worried because the Syrians and the surrounding countries were feeling threatened that, man, Israel kind of dominated us back when they were strong and they're over there rebuilding the walls. And so Nehemiah 4:9 says, we prayed to God about this, but we also posted a guard day and night. So yeah, we're going to pray to God about it, but there's something practical that we should do. In that case, they posted guards day and night. So you worried about a recession? Well, why? Because I might lose my job. Well, then what are you doing to improve your skill set so to make sure that you're the last person that they want to lay off? How are you doing with your cash reserves? Do you have enough hay in the barn, so to speak, to survive any downturn? So that's all of that. And from a portfolio standpoint, no stock goes up forever. No stock goes up forever. Every stock will correct at some point. Are you prepared for that? And if you're going to ride it out, fine. That's your plan. Are you comfortable sticking through that plan? It's just planning and thinking in advance of what you're going to do and then sticking to the plan. Doesn't mean you can't change the plan. But the thing that I like to think about is you don't want to change your strategy in the middle of a crisis. Wait for calm seas, and then you can learn how to be as a better sailman or sailor.
I think that's great practical advice. And yeah, I mean, I often tell people that if you actually want to be successful, you will have to initiate something. You're going to have to actually go out and do something. You're going to have to do some type of work in order to manifest whatever it is that you're wanting to create in life. Here's my last question for you. If listeners take away one practical action from your book that they can implement in the next 30 days, what would it be?
Man, that's a good question. I guess if you're going to implement anything from my book, a large part of what I try to talk about in the book is doubting the talking heads, doubting people like you and me. I'll quote another favorite verse, Acts 17:11. The believers in Berea were more noble than the Thessalonians, for they searched scripture daily to see if what Paul said was true. So that's part of what I'm trying to accomplish in my book, is to give you some ammunition to doubt what that big financial textbook says or what that talking media personality says, and think for yourself.
You know, my guest today has been Theodore Hicks, author of Evidence-Based Investing and founder of Hicks & Associates Wealth Management. If you want to learn more about his work or grab a copy of the book, you can find it online by searching Evidence-Based Investing, Theodore Hicks. If this conversation helped you think differently about how you're investing in this market, do me a favor, share this episode with a friend, post a clip on your socials, and make a donation to keep supporting independent content that's trying to make our community smarter about money. As always, I'm Algernon Cash. I'm your host. Thank you for locking in. Make sure you stay tuned to WTOB, because every Sunday morning, that's where you can lock in with me. But if you happen to miss me there, hopefully you're subscribed to the podcast. You can get that on YouTube, Apple, Spotify, Pandora, wherever you like to get your favorite podcast. You can always lock in there. And until next time, y'all stay locked in.
The executive producer of the Locked In podcast is Algernon Cash for WGC. The associate producer is Tim Beeman for Such and Such Media. This podcast is copyrighted and cannot be reproduced without express written consent of WGC.